නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Actually, last time we started a new sutta to discuss. So that is available in Majjhima Nikaya. It is the 112th sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. And it is called Chabbisodhana Sutta. Literally, it means sixfold purity or six types of purity, purifications. Interestingly, the sutta has only five purifications. And commentary mentioned that due to the oral transformation, there could be a loss of some information happened in, to the sutta. Therefore, they suggest certain sixth purification as well. So as we move forward, we can discuss another one. Anyway, now we are going one by one about these purifications. Actually, these are not merely Buddha explains that a beginner would be continuing. Rather, some deeper understanding is there, deeper practice is there. And again, it is given as a criterion to verify about claim about arhantship. Even during the Buddha's time, some monks used to come to Buddha, approach Buddha, and explain their achievement. They mentioned that they have achieved arhantship. And sometimes Buddha has mentioned, even though they have claimed that they are an arhant, sometimes they are really not. They have overestimated themselves. And some others are really genuinely, they are arhants. So likewise, these topics are discussed in the Dhamma, and certain individuals come and ask from Buddha whether everybody claiming as arahants, are they truly arahants? Then Buddha mentioned no, some of them are really arahants, but some others are very much overestimating themselves. So likewise, certain debate or discussion is going on regarding this subject. And here in this sutta, actually Buddha has given a criterion to verify whether a person's claim is true or false. Actually, discussing this sutta doesn't mean that we have to learn this criterion and then approach all the claimants and then ask from them these questions. It is not the task of this discussion. Rather, some interesting purification methods are explained in this sutta, and so that we can understand whether we are moving towards at least this direction, because it is not that arahantship is achieved overnight within a second or within a short period of time, but one has to practice for a long time, and accordingly one may reach the arahantship. So therefore, this kind of suttas are helping us to verify our own practice, verify our own path, so that we are in line with the practice, in line with the Buddha's teaching. So that is the kind of light that we are try to take from this sutta. And accordingly, we have discussed the very first purification. When someone is claiming that they are an arahant, so Buddha mentioned, you can be happy about it, but don't immediately accept it. Again, don't immediately reject it. Rather, try to question him. So the questioner is very much, as I mentioned, about depending on the fivefold purifications. And first one is related to very much four ways of expression, how one may deal with the outside world. As you know, we are dealing with the outside world using our senses, and particularly here four faculties, or rather four ways, are considered: using the eyes, using the ears, and then nose, tongue, body are taken as one way, a kind of sense, and mind is taken as the last one, the cognition. So with respect to them, how one is dealing with, how one has practiced even in the past and presently. So this question, once asked, a proper person, a proper arahant, may undoubtedly answer it properly. And that we have discussed last time. And now we can actually get into the second question. Now, basically, when this particular person answered it properly, then Buddha mentioned you can be happy about it, saying you can say good about it, and you can rejoice about it. But rather than stopping there, you need to ask another question. So kind of a cross-examination, verification, that one needs to continue. And then the second question is based on the aggregates. So we already discussed fair length on aggregates even during the last discussion. Say on Kajjaniya Sutta, I think we discussed about 7 weeks Kajjaniya Sutta, discussing each and every aggregate and how those are occupying our mind, how they are in a way polluting the mind, cluttering the mind, and we have discussed them in length. And the second question in this Chabbisodhana Sutta also with respect to aggregates. So question is going like this. Friend, there are these 5 aggregates affected by clinging, rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. What 5? Now the questioning person himself is giving the brief idea about 5 aggregates. That is the form aggregate, feelings aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. And they are subjected to clinging. So whenever we have the lust, hatred and delusion, so we prone to cling to all these different kinds of either one or many aggregates. So at a given time, mind is attached to any of these, clung to any of these. Now, then he is explaining, these friends are the 5 aggregates affected by clinging, rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. How does the Venerable One know, how does he see, regarding these 5 aggregates affected by clinging, so that through not clinging, his mind is liberated from the taints? Now, on the other hand, one has to work out with respect to these aggregates. So we need to have a fair amount of theoretical understanding about these aggregates. And accordingly, we have to watch the mind, investigate the mind, so that we can be able to understand whether there is any clinging has happened. Already kind of a grasping is there for any particular aggregate. And if it is available, then one has to release it, abandon it. So if one has done this process again and again properly, then one can become maybe Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, Arihant. So basically the attainments, once one can do that, then one can claim, or one can, without any trouble, one can explain how one has done that. So that is why it is mentioned, this is the natural way for him to answer. Now the person who has done the task, he can naturally answer without any trouble. He can answer how he has done it. Now Buddha explains how he would answer. So this is where the content that we need to pay close attention, because this is where the kind of a practice is explained, how one has practiced with respect to each and every aggregate. So if we consider the first aggregate, rupanko ahanga also abalang viragang viragunang anassasi kanti viditva ye rupe upayupadana chetaso adhitthana abhinivesa anusaya tesam khaya viraga nirodha chaga patinissagga vimuttam me chittanti pajanati. Now this is a very interesting statement where one may understand this form aggregate is abalang, that means feeble, viragunang, fading away, anassasikang, and you can't find much comfort. Actually, we can think there is a kind of a comfort, there is kind of a, say, happiness, pressure coming through the body, but that is very temporary. Maybe when you are healthy, when you are young, there's a certain amount of pleasure available, but that too is short-lived, and we never know when we might get sick, and undoubtedly all are going towards the decay and death, getting old and ultimately die. So these are the typical nature of the body. So therefore, understanding that feeble nature, understanding that fading away part, and the availability of unavailability of continuous comfort is something that we need to look into. Now, if you can remember when we were discussing Rupakkhanda in the Kajjaniya Sutta, Buddha has given some similar explanation why even the term Rupa is mentioned. Rupatitiko bhikkave tasma rupanti vujjati. So since it is subjected to deformations, subjected to various changes, due to very trivial reasons, maybe mosquito bite, maybe higher temperature, maybe too much cold, maybe hunger, thirst. So likewise, some trivial reasons, causes, are really affecting this body. So one may properly understand then, though this body is very vulnerable. It is not a strong, sustainable, solid-like a thing. Rather, it's quite feeble. And again, it's continuously going towards the decay. It's continuously decaying. And even though you think that it is my body, my beautiful body, my strong body, but you can't have kind of a guarantee. So this is something that one has to understand. So as we discussed last time during the Kajjaniya Sutta, so it is not mere through book knowledge or through merely listening that one has to know this. Rather, one has to contemplate it with respect to direct observation, by means of direct investigation. So that is why the Kayanupassana is quite important, so that one may first of all produce or generate some amount of concentration, mindfulness, and with the aid of this mindfulness and concentration, one is again and again contemplating the body, maybe looking at as various parts, body parts, maybe considering the, say, decay in nature, loathsomeness of the body, bodily parts, and deeply, probably one may can even understand how it has generated using various elements. So it's a kind of a deep meditative understanding, experiential knowledge. So when one has that kind of an understanding, so it is quite easy to let go of the thing. So otherwise it's a kind of a forceful letting go. It is not that through understanding a kind of a natural letting go happen, rather we are trying to force the mind. But when we go through proper path, proper practice, so the letting go is not a big issue because mind would let go it naturally. It's a kind of a law of nature. So when one is disgusted about something, when one has properly understood about something, then there is no point of holding it. He doesn't feel it worthy of holding. He doesn't feel it is valuable. So the letting go process would be quite easy. Now, viragunam anasathikanti viditva ye rupe upayupadana. Now, when one knows these things, then letting go at different levels are possible. So different levels are explained here. So that is, say, upadana chetaso adhithana abhinivesa anusaya, and even attraction, upaya. Now these are the ones, so Buddha mentioned, are the possible, say, possible kinds of attractions, possible kinds of attachments. Now sometimes we may have kind of an attraction, kind of an attachment towards the body. That is one level. Maybe strongly grasping it. That is another level, clinging, upadana. And probably we may have kind of a standpoint in the mind. So this body has to be like this. Her body is like this. She is beautiful. I am strong. I am beautiful. I am pretty. So I am holding kind of a standpoint with respect to the body. So this is a kind of a mental formation. So I am holding kind of a perception with respect to body. So this is also upadana. This is also clinging. And adherences. So you have completely in the body, very much adhere to the body. considering it as mine, it is myself. It's a kind of a strong identification, abhinivesa. And interestingly, now these are, I mean, sometimes we can understand how maybe tiresome these kinds of adherences, these kinds of attachments, because it consumes a fair amount of mental energy. But on the other hand, because of continuous attachments, adherences, mind get colored slowly, slowly. Mind get very much like programmed, conditioned slowly. And ultimately, mind has a kind of an inherent quality of attachment towards this very body. That is where we call it as anusaya. So the mind is very much like programmed. It is now conditioned, stereotyped to have kind of a view about the body. So that is where the most difficult part, even though you are released from the body, even temporary, it doesn't mean that you may lose the possibility of reattachment, possibility of re-grasping. So that is where we have to address the anusaya part, the latent tendencies part. So that is the one the practice take maybe long time. And when one properly do this process, then Buddha mentioned, so one may continue all these things, all these attachments, all these graspings, all these adherences, all these mental standpoints and latent tendencies, they all start to kaya, viraga, nirodha, chaga, patinisaga. That means they start to kind of slowly destroy, slowly fade away. And then they start to cease. And you are very much like giving up, you are relinquishing. So this is the process that would naturally happen. Now if we consider, say, Satipatthana Sutta, when we consider Kayanupassana, so this has to happen naturally. Now it is not, as I mentioned, it is not forcefully you are trying to get rid of the body. Rather you are taking care of the body, you are looking after it. But at the same time, you are developing wisdom with respect to body. And again, using the body, you are understanding its various postures, anatomical parts, how they are behaving, how they are loathsome, and going deeper, understanding the, say, elements and their characteristics. And more you are working out like this, kind of a change happens within the mind. So it has to happen slowly, it may happen slowly. And you are continuing the practice, and maybe later, after some time, you may understand, okay, I don't have that much of an attachment right now. Previously, I was very much like obsessed with the body, but now I don't have that kind of a crazy situation. Rather, I am now somewhat neutral about the body. I can be with it, I am taking care of it, but I am not too much identifying with the body. So that kind of an understanding has to happen within ourselves. As we are continuing our practice, so when we look back, we should be able to verify whether there is this sort of a process is going on. This kind of a smooth progress is happening. If so, we can be happy. And that's why, say, more and more close examination of the body. That means how these elements are working and their inconstant nature, their transient nature, understanding their impermanence. So these are the ones really have a great influence about the attachment. So when we are understanding the impermanent nature, transient nature, so these attachments start to shatter, start to even tremble. Now slowly we are losing the compactness of the body, and we understand it's a combination of so many parts. That also is another insight. And slowly we can continue the process, continue the path. And then later we may understand, okay, even there is no person here, there is no individual here. There are various causes and conditions making it. So even though I deludedly attach to it as a person, there is no person here. It's a combination of so many parts, so many elements. So with that kind of a deeper understanding, so letting go process may be further strengthened. Now, so likewise, So this particular Arahant is now explaining, so how he has abandoned the form aggregate. And then he similarly explains how he worked out on the feeling aggregate. It's a very similar process. So even the feeling aggregate, he may understand that also is feeble, that also fading away. And you can't have kind of a trust. You can't depend on the feelings. And by the way, unknowingly, we may have certain attachments, certain graspings. And maybe kind of an idea about the feeling. I am a suffering person. I am a really happy person. So this is kind of an identification with respect to the feelings. I am describing myself with respect to feelings. So, I mean, using feelings, I can have a kind of a view, a generated standpoint. Based on that, I am actually dealing with the outside. Explaining myself, how I am coping with the situation, coping with the life. So everything, maybe I can talk with respect to feelings. Now, if we have even that kind of an identification, still it is attachment towards the feelings. We have taken it too strong, without knowing their impermanent nature, their transient nature. And again, when we are going through pleasurable feelings, when naturally we get attached to them, holding them, grasping them, then the raga anusaya, the tendency to lust, is growing. On the other hand, when we are going through, painful feelings, now we want to get rid of it, I don't want it, I am having strong aversion towards it, I want to get rid of it, now another anusaya, patika anusaya, the latent tendency of aversion is now growing. And typically we don't want to even be with the neutral feelings because they are quite boring, and so we ignore them. So the ignorance, unknowing, is there with respect to the neutral feelings. So the avijja anusaya, the latent tendency of ignorance, is growing. So you can see, without properly knowing these threefold feelings, we are growing anusaya, we are growing latent tendencies. So very much like helpless process. Actually, when we are unknowingly growing these latent tendencies, there is no way out. We are very much like trapped. But when one is doing Vedana Anupassana, so that is another kind of a practice that we have to adhere, or we have to take, we have to practice, that will help us to properly understand the nature of feelings. How they are arising, how they are changing, and how vulnerable they are. And sometimes, even though we consider it as a one feeling, it is a combination of so many minute feelings. So likewise, our understanding about feeling is growing. And sometimes we have given over emphasis to these feelings. And again, we have added a psychological pain onto the physical pain. So the pain has doubled. So that is why what mentioned in the Salla Sutta, when body is going through some sort of a bodily pain, maybe chronic pain, so we are adding another pain onto it, so that is mental, psychological. So then the pain has doubled, or you tripled. Now, that is where we don't know how to handle pain. But on the other hand, when one is properly observing feelings objectively, so we are maintaining kind of a detached observation. So we are detached now. We are maintaining kind of a gap, kind of a distance. Rather than identifying and holding, grasping pleasurable feelings, you can keep the pleasurable feeling as it is, and you can distantly observe it. Kind of a detached observation can be done. Similarly, if there is a painful feeling, rather than trying to get rid of it, rather than trying to hate it, you can still be patient with it, observe it, and even can learn from it. Without ignoring neutral feelings, you can carefully observe them as well. Suppose you are doing walking. So during the walking, most of the experiences are neutral. Probably you may get that feeling. And that feeling also can be observed. More you observe, more and more understanding happens, so that your mindfulness is sharpened, wisdom is sharpened. So likewise, deeper understanding is possible. Now, more and more one is able to look at these feelings like that, now the tendency to generate anusaya, latent tendencies, become less and less. Because you know how to handle feelings. Whenever a pleasurable feeling is going on, you are not holding it, you are not identifying with it. You are not attached to it, you are not grasping it. You are not expecting it again and again, wishing it again and again. Rather, you know it's an impermanent condition which has arisen due to, say, contact. When the contact is not available, it may disappear. So you understand its feeble nature. You understand its, say, undependable nature. You can't depend on these feelings. So it's a kind of an observation which is going on. So this very observation, investigation, help us to change the attitude available within ourselves. It is not that we are forcefully changing it, rather our duty is simply to closely investigate. So this close examination, investigation, slowly changes our inner attitude, inner grasping, inner tendencies. So that may help to let go of the whole different kinds of feelings. So there also then one can say, so you can see that there was an attachment, there was a grasping, there was an identification. Now that is being slowly decayed. Khaya. Viraga. Now you have a kind of a dispassion towards different kinds of feelings. Because you know their proper nature. Now you are not much elated when you are going through some pleasure. And you are not crying when you are going through some pain. Because you know that is their nature. That is their characteristic. So you can patiently endure even a chronic pain. And different neutral feelings also you can observe mindfully. So that helps to slowly let go of all different kinds of feelings. Just to abandon, relinquish them. And that way, regarding the feelings, you are not now identifying. You are not holding them. You are not attached to them. So this is how he would operate or practice with respect to feelings. And similarly, Buddha explained how to, say, practice with respect to perceptions. Because different signs, marks, are continuously we take when we are recognizing something. Through the eyes, we take signs of the sights. Through the ears, we take certain signs of the, say, sounds. With respect to odors, we take certain kind of signs, marks. With respect to, say, tastes, flavors, we take certain signs. With respect to tangibles, we take certain signs. And different mental objects also we recognize with respect to certain signs. But the problem is, different signs, when they are attractive, when they are, say, severe, some of them even strongly stored in the mind. That is where ultimately come as anusaya. Now even when you are not really going through those signs, you can memorize. I mean, you can take it out of the memory. You can remember these signs. Say if you want to repeat a particular song that you have heard many years ago, if you are too attached to it, you can easily take its melody. And even certain words, lyrics, probably you can remember. And maybe if you want to think about a particular beautiful sight, maybe you can even imagine it. A mental image may appear in the front and it is very attractive. You can now you start adding so many other things. All your likes, your attachments, your mental standpoints, everything is now cooperating, everything is now coming to the picture, and further fabrications happen. Now you are fully even born into that situation. So this kind of an operation is available in the mind. So whenever we are going through different signs, marks, and ultimately they become kind of deep perceptions. Perceptions about a person. He's a good person, he's a bad person, he's a envious person, he's a stingy person. So we hold different kinds of perceptions with respect to a particular person. I don't like him. I hate him. I love him. So all these are different kinds of perceptions now deeply rooted in the mind. Now whenever we are dealing with that person, so these perceptions are operating. They are the ones influencing our behavior. Now it's very intricate actually. They are closely interwoven. So removing them, understanding them, closely examine these integral happenings, very difficult. Because very much like we are like a fish in the water. We were swimming there from the birth. Now how to overcome this, how to penetrate it? So that is where a fair understanding of the mind is needed. So once you are going through Kaya Anupassana and Vedana Anupassana, a deep, closed, humble, impartial investigation of the mind is necessary. So we need to honestly understand what are the tendencies available in the mind, how my mind is working, behaving, what are the patterns available, to what I am having too much desires. So how I am taking a particular decision, is that decision kind of a biased? Did I work out based on kind of a previous attachment? Or do I have kind of a hate? Is it the reason that I have taken this particular decision? So likewise, we have to do a very honest introspection in order to understand all these different kinds of perceptions. Very difficult. It may definitely take long time, because typically what we have is the perversions. Instead of proper understanding, our all different views, our recognitions are all taken based on various perversions. When there is no real beauty, we see something as beautiful. When there is no real constant nature or permanence, we see things as permanent. When there is no person, we see it or impersonal, but we take it personal. We take it as a person, as an individual. So these are, deeply rooted. So knowing these things may take long time. It requires close investigation, close examination of the mind. How different signs come and occupy the mind. They come and crowd the mind. And as we discussed previously, so they are very much like eating the mind. Because now the mind is colored based on a particular perception. Based on that, now you are operating. How about mind keeping quite pure? So these are the areas so we have to deeply look into. So rather than we are taking a decision, rather than we are taking a standpoint based on a colored mind, how about keeping the mind unbiased, pure, and then take a decision? Then it would be much better and more correct. But on the other hand, we operate differently. So we have certain perceptions about a particular situation, maybe about a person. And based on that, we are talking, based on that, we are thinking further, and based on that, we are operating. Now, when one continues one's practice, slowly we may understand how to, recognize these different perceptions, preconceived ideas, different mental images, signs, marks, etc. And now you are trying to restrain the mind. You have to do a kind of a further and further investigation, be quite mindful, and without allowing the mind to get occupied or preoccupied with the images, mental images, you are now trying to have a kind of a dispassion towards the images, mental images, and even various perceptions. Kind of a dispassion has to be developed. And when one has kind of a dispassion towards images, mental images, perceptions, then it is very less chance to get caught, to get entangled. Sanya virattasana santi ganta. So Buddha mentioned, when you are quite dispassionate towards different kinds of perceptions, now rest probability to get involved, to get entangled to the defilements. Now you are able to maintain the mind undefiled. Now, this is actually easy to consider the mental formations also here, because more and more you observe the mind, now you may understand kind of a holes in this, in the thoughts, within the thoughts. Previously, everything is very much like as a bubble, as a one thing, as a bundle. But now you may understand, okay, one after the other. One thought after another thought, after another thought. So likewise, you can distinctly recognize how thoughts happen. Now that will further enhance your understanding about their impermanent nature. And now you are not really interested about their content, rather you are interested about their behavior, how they come and go, how unknowingly you might even support it, that you may now try to avoid. Now you allow them to come and simply observe it. As a result of that, now they slowly fade away. Now you may experience kind of a relaxed mind, kind of a spacious mind, uncrowded mind. And the images, whatever the mental images and the name and form, nama rupa, now they don't stay longer in the mind. So slowly mind get cleared, cleansed. Now if one is operating like this, whatever the attachments we had, whatever the standpoints we had with respect to perceptions, with respect to, say, mental formations, so they start to fade away. Now, it's a kind of a natural process. So we were attached to them because we have taken them too seriously. We have taken them as a solid unit. Say, when you have kind of a lustful situation, so you have taken this lust as a strong thing and you become lust. I am a lustful person. I am burning with lust. But when one is able to recognize each and every thought producing lust or contributing lust or taking different nimittas, different signs of which is promoting lust, now that you may understand, okay, it's the kind of a mind itself is weaving this. Probably the outside object may not that be attractive, but you are internally weaving a net of thoughts. That makes the person really beautiful. And similar thing for the opposite. The person in front of you may not be really bad, but you have your own perceptions, and based on that you are adding your own dislikes, preconceived ideas, and projected views. And now it's kind of a, in front of a person has become really a devil. So this is how we operate. Now if we can look at it, if we can understand it, then slowly we can say we are very much like unentangling the process. We know how mind is deluding us. Now that is where all different kinds of mental formations start to fade away. Now you can maintain a mind, kind of a quiet, still mind, because less disturbances, less constructions, less fabrications. Mind like to rest, mind like to relax. And you may feel that, say, when mind is engaged with too much of formations, you feel burdened, you feel tiresome, and you want to stop it. You want to stop thinking, avoid mental proliferation, because you understood its peril, you understood its, say, harmful nature. So this is how slowly, by honest reflection, honest introspection, one may slowly let go of this whole process. And similarly, Buddha mentioned with respect to the consciousness aggregate. So that is where the tricky part, by having all these different, say, forms aggregate, feelings aggregate, perceptions aggregate, and mental formations aggregate, we get the notion that I am available, I am living. And constantly mind get occupied. And it is kind of a picture is always available. Kind of a name and form is always available. And we find it quite valuable, important, attractive. And ultimately we get attached to it. We get hooked up with it. And we take it as a true. But if you are slowly allowing this process to fade away, then ultimately the consciousness can't even establish. It can't find a place, can't find a footing. So that is also actually we discussed during the consciousness aggregate explanation when we were discussing Kajjaniya Sutta. I am just giving a summary here. So with respect to consciousness aggregate also, Buddha mentioned it is feeble, it is fading away, and it is comfortless. Abalang viragunang anassasikang. You can't depend on it. And you think what I am seeing is the correct thing, what I am seeing is real. But unfortunately, it's a mind-made image. It's a name and form, it's a namarupa. And you are thinking about someone, but what you see right now is a kind of a mental illusion. So these are very interesting areas for us to investigate, because then very much like the practice become constantly kind of an introspection. You are not finding fault with the others, rather you are finding many fabrications happening inside, many mental illusions happen inside. Your own preconceived ideas are corrupting the situation, entangling the situation, influencing the situation. And if one is able to understand this, then it's a matter of slowly minimizing that influence, reducing that influence, so that the mind remains fairly pure. Mind can maintain its purity. Maybe temporary, it's not immediately, but temporary. But that temporary pure state of mind has to be cultivated, has to be developed. So that is what this particular person, this so-called Arahant, has done. So that is why, I mean, if one has continued that process for longer time, so answering the question won't be a big issue. So we as practitioners, so then we can verify whether I am doing it. Still, I am not an Arahant. Still, I mean, we are not yet accomplished. But at least if we are trying to do this, at least if we are very much in line with this process, then we can be happy. Because we know, I mean, this is what Buddha has mentioned. This is what Buddha has mentioned as the proper answer, proper kind of purification. So if our practice is in line with this kind of a purification process, then that means I am not doing something wrong. Rather, I am very much working in line with the Buddha's teaching. So it is very well explained. That is what this particular Arahant has done. So that is why he could answer it properly. So if I am doing the same thing, maybe I can verify myself, I can verify my own growth, on progress, on insight with respect to this sutta. So when one properly answer like this, then Buddha mentioned, okay, you can be really happy about it, and you can see that this particular person has done her particular real job, and as a result of that, all the clinging, all the attachments, all the adherences with respect to five aggregates are now abandoned. And as a result of that, the mind is liberated. All the taints are destroyed. Now, if the answer is given like that, then you can acknowledge it, you can be happy about it, and really you can praise him, but don't stop there. You can have another question. Actually, I have added another point here that we already discussed coming from the Upaya Sutta. I think I don't need to mention that again here, because in the Upaya Sutta also similarly Buddha mentioned how one may continue one's practice with respect to five aggregates. And I think now I can conclude the session. Hope I have covered the second type of purification available in this Chabbisodhana Sutta. I like to open the session for questions now.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If we have any new friends joining us, you may participate in the Q&A by raising your hand or submitting them via the chat. So, Bhante, I have received quite a really long email written question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to see if I can paste it here for you while I also read it out loud.
Right.
Just so efforts it. Okay.
It's not the same question, you know?
No.
I mean, the questionnaire available in the Chabbisodhana Sutta is not the thing, no?
It is. It
ah,
is
really?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So, the question says, respected Bhante, recently you referred to how the lifespan of humans is getting shorter as the sila worsens, etc. If I remember well, you also mentioned future Buddha Mitteya. I read comments on the Chakravarti
Sihanada Sutta, yeah.
About the Sutta of Digha Nikaya, which states the Chakravarti Sihanada Sutta is clearly a late discourse, composed probably during Asoka's time, as it serves as a sort of monastic memorandum to the world monarch, exhorting him in good governance. This is the only place in the Pali canon where the future Buddha Mitteya is mentioned, which probably evinces the fact that the historical Buddha Gautama has passed away, and the Buddhist community is still struggling with the memory and meaning of his passing. While the Mahayana trend was to deify the Buddha, the more conservative Hinaya monastics worked on the Buddha lineage, extending it into the near future in cosmic time. Basically, this would mean that the Buddha himself never mentioned Mitteya to come. Please, respected Bhante, can you please share your thoughts and knowledge about this? Much appreciation for the ones at night.
Yeah. I haven't, as you also mentioned, come across much about the suttas available talking about Maitreya Buddha. And as you have mentioned, it may be available in the Chakravarti Sihanada Sutta. And by the way, I mean, if we can take benefit of the existing Buddha Sasana, I think that would be the most important thing. I mean, thinking about different Buddhas, lineages and future Buddhas and all these are, I mean, no point of talking much about them. Because there is no, I mean, say if there is a bus available right now, why are we, and again, if we are ready, why are we thinking about a future bus available in some later time? Because we don't know. Suppose you are available in the Buddha's next Buddha's time. How are you sure that you will be born as a human being? Suppose Maitreya Buddha has arisen, but how can you sure about yourself? Are you sure that you are going to be born as a human being with proper wisdom so that you can understand what Maitreya Buddha is talking, what he is preaching? Very difficult. I mean, even our Buddha's time, say for example, when Buddha start talking to Pukkusati, so he didn't know that this is the Buddha. Later, because of his wisdom faculty, he was able to understand, okay, this is the Buddha himself. has arrived out of compassion. So that because of his wisdom, that's because of his previous practice, because he is a practitioner who was done his practice even during the Kassapa Buddha, but couldn't attain. But during the Gautama Buddha, he was able to quickly understand the teaching. So likewise, so therefore, I mean, talking too much about these kinds of points, I don't think that is useful. Rather, we have to investigate the present teaching, present Buddha's asana, and how to get the benefit from it. How I can practice to the best of my ability to get the best out of this existing Buddha's asana. Because we don't know, I mean, how long we would live, how long my faculties are shining, how long I have the capacity to learn, to practice. And again, we don't know how long the teaching will be available. So likewise, many uncertain situations are there. So during that time, I think the best approach would be to get the maximum benefit of what is available. So therefore, I don't know much about, say, lineages about the Maitreya Buddha. I mean, those are explained, as you mentioned, certain commentarial works, Buddha Vansa, all different kinds of works, books are there added to the Kuddaka Nikaya, and different explanations about what, who would be the parents, who would be the queen, and all these different, and who would be the chief disciples of Maitreya Buddha, and all these different kinds of explanations are there. But I mean, those are maybe historical, maybe predictions, but rather than depending on them, we better think about the present situation. So that's what I feel would be much useful. Yeah.
Thank you, Sanjay. So the next question states, dear Bhante, during meditation, when we have sufficient mindfulness to see the thoughts coming and going, I'd like to know whether the correct attitude should be not to get involved anyway and wait until the mind gets free from thoughts irrespective of how long it takes. There's one sentence.
Yeah, that is where we have to have a fair amount of patience, because I mean, it's not that immediately we may get the mature level of wisdom. It's a kind of a long process, and it depends on the person and how much we have worked it out, and how properly we are doing it, how sharp our faculties are. Now all these things are kind of a say experiment. Say for example, you are trying to investigate say blood sample, and you are keeping it under a microscope. But if you don't know how to handle the microscope, how to properly illuminate, how to properly adjust the or focus the lenses, how to properly maintain the distance, and how to properly look at it. So all these things are necessary things that you need to know in order to use the microscope. So if you know it, if you have some previous experience, then it would be easy for you to look at it, properly investigate it, and get some idea about it. So all similarly, when we do our practice, so it may take some time to very much like refine our faculties. At the beginning, we don't have much mindfulness. So we need to develop mindfulness. As we are developing mindfulness, okay, some say concentration is happening. Now mind become less wandering. Now it can focus onto something for a considerable period of time. Now when that skill is available, okay, now we can start the investigation. Now even when we do the investigation, sometimes we do it wrongly. We are applying too much energy, so the mind gets scattered. If you are not applying enough energy, then we become drowsy. But when we are doing it properly, with a well-balanced mind, well-balanced faculties, okay, then only the proper investigation happens. Then only it will contribute more towards the insights. At the same time, we have to maintain the mind very calm, quiet, free from inner chatter, free from preconceived ideas, have a kind of fresh look, little bit of curiosity. Then we do, okay, proper investigation. So that is how the insights are possible. And even when an insight happens, we have to be a little careful not to too much say add our own say book knowledge to it. Rather, we keep it as an experiential knowledge. We appreciate it, we acknowledge it, and again start the job, continue the practice. Then another insight is also possible. So likewise, it's a matter of continuing the path. So actually, how we know that some kind of an understanding is available now? How we know understanding about the three characteristics, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and unself is available? That actually represents to our behavior. Say, if some deeper understanding about impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and unself is available within ourselves, so it shows through our activities, how we approach to something, how we are trying to deal with a particular problem, how our attitude. So all these things, if we can carefully analyze, probably you might notice, okay, with respect to several years ago or with respect to several months ago, I now have a different approach, I now have a different attitude. My mind is now working differently, not like before. It's a kind of an honest reflection, and through that probably you can understand, okay, some improvement is going on, even though I can't see daily progress, but overall I am getting some sort of a progress, so it is being reflected through my behavior, through my attitudes. So there is something to be happy, actually, that indicates that the things are working. Now, when we are going through that, then further, say, a kind of a more dispassion is happening. So you may understand, okay, I'm not much interested about this thing. I'm not interested about too much about the politics. Not interested about, like others, I'm not interested about watching movies, so etc., etc. So you may see that kind of a dispassion is arising in the mind. So, I mean, when we are going through this sort of a situation, so the kind of a temporary kind of a release may happen when we are least expected. If we are expecting it too much, that also has become a hindrance. So we are quite contented, quite happy, and continuing the practice without expecting anything, doing the job. When we are least expected, mind get released. But I mean, it may not be free for longer time. Again, the mind may collapse, and again attachment may happen. But you are continuing the same thing again and again. Therefore, the temporary release may happen again and again. It is a repeatable process. You can experiment it. That is why it is very much kind of a scientific process. You can repeat it. The same result is possible. So then you may understand, okay, this release, this temporary freedom is able to achieve. I can now maintain it for, say, several minutes. So that is why it may happen. That is how it may happen. So please continue your practice. I think things may happen in a favorable manner.
That I like to ask on behalf of a friend.
Yeah.
So he mentions that during his Vipassana practice, he's able to notice the subtle sensations of the body, and he was so focused and so plugged into the kind of Vipassana that he felt like he was moving without really making any effort to move, and his legs just kept walking. But he doesn't, even though these things, occur and he's observing all these phenomena, but he doesn't feel like wisdom is arising. And he doesn't see how this knowledge is transforming his or purifying his thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bhante, do you have any thoughts on his experience?
Yeah, so that is why I was explaining. I mean, you need to verify that through kind of an introspection, whether my attitudes have now changed, whether my behavior has changed with respect to, say, several years ago, how I lived, what was the attitude towards myself regarding the food, towards different clothes, say different movies, different events, how I have liked the gatherings, how I liked the parties. So likewise, what was my behavior, say several years ago? Now, what is the difference? Is there any difference? So honestly, we have to reflect, is there any difference? Say before I started practice, say after 1 year, after another year, so is there any kind of a difference in my behavior, in my way of thinking, how to handle things? So depending, I mean, using these lifetime situations, experiences, we can verify, okay, whether there is a progress happen. That's why, I mean, it is very difficult to see merely through the, during your sitting, that how kind of a progress has happened. But overall, when I consider my life, is there any behavioral changes has happened? And on the other hand, during the practice also you can verify, say previously suppose in order to be mindful you have to struggle, too much of distractions. But now say you can quickly establish mindfulness. Similarly, you couldn't previously establish concentration quickly because mind is scattered, but now you can within a minute, say you can concentrate the mind. And on the other hand, I mean, you couldn't see different phenomena clearly previously, but now you can clearly see them. You can clearly comprehend them. And say, you can even understand how they are changing, how they are arising and passing away, and how it happened as a kind of an impermanent, impersonal experience that you have no control. So all these things, even during the sitting, you can see whether I am able to see it, experiencing it much easier than before. If it is possible, then that means kind of a progress is possible, progress is happening. So likewise, we can verify whether kind of an improvement is there. So, but as I said, you can't measure daily in a way, but overall you can measure using a long period of time. On the other hand, you can measure during your practice with respect to several weeks ago, is there any clarity of mind? Is there any deeper understanding? You can achieve things more easily. There is no much struggle now. Mind quickly concentrate, mind quickly discern things. So these are the indicators that we can verify whether we are moving in the progress.
Thank you, Banting. I think he will be very happy to hear.
Okay.
If there's any other questions, feel free to raise your hand or send them through the chat.
So today our chief student is absent, it seems.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Joseph, you may unmute.
Thank you, Jennifer. I will stand in for Chetra Devi. She's not here today, but I wanted to ask a question or maybe make a comment, Bhante.
Yeah.
I was reading, I just finished reading the book No Boundary by Ken Wilber,
mm-hmm.
which Venerable Dhammajiva has referred to often in his talks, and that I picked it up and I went through it in just a few days. I found it was really kind of a good read. And I found it gave me at the end a bit of a better understanding on how to tackle this kind of the step of the consciousness aggregate, which I'd always struggled with,
mm-hmm.
because I found I had gotten to a point where I could sort of observe thoughts fairly quickly, but I always felt that I was observing thoughts, and that seemed to me very concrete.
Mm-hmm.
That there was always I was observing, mm-hmm. and the idea that I didn't exist just seemed extremely abstract, and I just really couldn't comprehend. Even, like how to not kind of presented as this eye, observing eye, as a kind of a universal type of eye rather than a personal kind of eye, like a universal consciousness, and that being the primary boundary with the first thing that we create, kind of thing that then we create on top of. It kind of just clicked, and I found I was able in some way to kind of observe that consciousness in a way I hadn't done before, and I felt I wasn't able to really penetrate anything, but there seemed to be a kind of a disruption. Like I remember at a certain point when I was doing anapanasati and observing the breath, and when the breath started to become very subtle and disappear, I felt that I was kind of asphyxiating. It was very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I wasn't breathing. I was very conscious that I wasn't breathing properly, and I didn't quite know how to deal with that. Whereas now, when that happens, it tends to pass very quickly. I have a confidence with it, and it's not really disruptive. I kind of felt like the same thing was happening, but with this awareness or consciousness, or this, it was really a feeling of me, like a feeling of I, was kind of getting disrupted, but it was... it was like an agitation, and I kind of felt that all of a sudden what had been a really solid feeling, which I couldn't really sort of locate anywhere, it was just a sort of a pervasive feeling that I am watching all this, started to sort of break down into kind of, I would say like bubbles. It was kind of there, then not there, then there, then not there. They were happening kind of very, very, very quickly. And that was kind of a very new thing, and I found that since then, this was maybe about a week ago, since then I found I was much more like sitting much more often, just like rather than preoccupied when I didn't know what to do, I had time rather than say reading the news or reading another book or something. I found I could just sit and very quickly kind of be in a fairly relaxed, concentrated state, and then sort of observing this consciousness and going through this process of it kind of appearing, disappearing, and notice how quickly it just constantly reappeared. Like it was just a continually reappearing. And then other times, when I would say go outside, how I felt really, at the least after sitting, say, 30 minutes, maybe going for a walk, and feeling really connected with things, like looking at the tree and walking down the street, to even like things like rocks on the sidewalk, everything seemed very, I would say, alive and animated. I felt very relaxed and like I would say very connected with things, and that would maybe pass after about 30 minutes. I would sort of be back to thinking about things and kind of noticing that that sort of say euphoria that kind of passed. So I just wanted to share that and ask for your thoughts, please.
Yeah. So I think one thing we can do is that during when we are experiencing the signless state, say suppose you are continuing your practice and the mind becomes signless, there is no any mental image available, there is no attachment available, mind is free, so probably you can expand it. Say you are expanding it to a one direction, you can expand it to the right direction. So first you expand it to the front direction, then to the right direction, to the back direction, to the left direction, to the upper direction, to the lower direction. So likewise, you can expand it. So that will actually further enhance this Cheto Vimutti. You know, one way of developing Cheto Vimutti is Metta. Probably you have heard Metta Cheto Vimutti. So when you are developing Metta Cheto Vimutti, I mean, we are taking a particular person, maybe a respectable teacher, kind of someone who we are respecting, and we are generating that feeling of, say, Metta. Then after that, we have to spread Metta towards all the beings in front of us, towards all the beings onto our right hand side, towards the all beings onto our behind, onto all the beings onto left, all the beings into the up, all the beings to the down. So likewise, now it is a kind of a expanded Metta, kind of a completely liberated mind through Metta. So same approach we can take even at the signless state, because that too is a Cheto Vimutti, Animitta Cheto Vimutti. So you may go through the Vipassana practice, and already probably you can maintain your mind without any object. So while being there, I mean, purposely probably you can expand it to all the directions and see the experience. It is a kind of a complete opening up. The mind is fully opened. There is no boundary, no limit. The completely mind has become fully expanded, fully pervaded throughout the whole universe. It's a very powerful experience, and you can see some similar experience might happen what you have experienced just before. Similar experience would be possible. So this way actually we can kind of dilute our I, the feeling of I. So I am observing. So that I am observing is no more, because I is diluted, completely dissolved into this experience. Because now, yeah, it's a matter of complete signless state pervaded throughout the whole universe. The I also is completely diluted. So this way actually we can further kind of promote the situation, but we have to do it carefully. I mean, I am not recommending it, doing it often, because it's a pretty powerful concentration practice where you have to do it in a say sensible manner without overdoing it. Because if too much concentration is generated, ultimately we become kind of overwhelmed by concentration. That is also not the good thing. So maintaining proper balance, kind of a very subtle, soft, delicate balance of mindfulness, wisdom and concentration would be better. But now what I have explained is kind of overwhelming through concentration. But I mean, doing it one time won't be a big harm. So you can try it out and you can recognize kind of a feeling. But later, again, calm down and relax yourself and keep the mind in a quiet, relaxed, still manner. And still kind of a pervaded experience is there, but not so powerful. Yeah.
Okay. And would there be an indicator that I was going too far? Would there be some sort of danger sign or some red flag of some kind to indicate that?
Yeah. You know,
so time to relax.
So say when you start your practice, now say the next time, now suppose you are doing it for a long time, again and again. So the next time, I mean, the thing is, defilements may not happen and your mind may completely stop taking signs, and it can go a little too far. You may feel that I it's difficult to live now with the others, difficult to live with the typical life. Mind is not taking any sign. I mean, it's very impractical now. You may feel a little uncomfortable when you are going too far.
You mean uncomfortable when I return to
daily life,
activities?
Exactly.
I have the experience, and then when I come to say go to work, I feel that I can't work properly.
Exactly.
I'm too dispassionate. Kind of thing.
Exactly.
I see.
So that is where we need to have
thank you very much. Thank you, Bhante. Thank you.
Okay. Theravan
Sanlai.
Theravan Sanlai.
But Okay, I believe that may be the last question for today.
Okay, fine. Okay, then we have spent about 1 hour and 15 minutes. Today also we were able to discuss certain aspects of the Buddha's teaching and get some light from these sutta teachings. So all the merits that we have accumulated, we'll share with all the past devil relatives, all the celestial beings, and whoever in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasatthaca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasatthaca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasatthaca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.